So I was reading an article online yesterday entitled Do's and Don'ts of Preaching During Coronavirus Outbreak. Now, the majority of the tips were actually pretty good advice, some good things to think about, but then I got to number 9 on the list. It said, 9th, when preaching, refrain from making jokes about COVID-19. It explains, avoid sermon illustrations like, Christians, we need to infect people with the gospel the way people are infecting each other with coronavirus. Just get close to people and sneeze the grace of God in their hearts. And then the article says, this would be unhelpful. I just don't even know what to do with that. I think even though we're not supposed to touch our faces, I did an actual facepalm when I read that, but apparently that was useful advice for someone out there. I can assure you that's not the sermon that you're going to hear today. You may, however, have been somewhat curious about the gospel story that we did read this morning, about Jesus being confronted in the temple and asked about paying taxes, and wonder what you are going to hear from your preacher today. Turns out we did not read that story because we're all up to our ears in W-2s and 1040s, though many of us probably are. It actually comes to us as part of the Lenten series that we've been doing here at Muhlenberg, Extraordinary. We've been experiencing Jesus' journey to Jerusalem by paying attention to 10 ordinary objects that Jesus would have encountered on the way, and seeing how they point us to God's extraordinary love and grace. We've been using the devotional book Lent in Plain Sight by Jill Duffield to further guide us through each week. So far, we've turned our focus to dust, bread, and crosses. This week, we look at coins. So before I go on, wherever you are, I invite you to grab your wallet or reach into your pocket or your couch cushions or wherever you may have some loose change and hold those coins in your hand. Go ahead. I'll give you a minute. Yep, get them out. Yeah, okay. Wednesday night, in what turned out to be our last church event in person for a season, Jill Duffield, the author of this devotional book, joined us and helped us reflect on how things can shape us. She quoted an author who wrote, "In human settings across time and space, objects have power. They remind, shape, overtake, startle, stir, and speak." To illustrate this, she held in her hands some coins and asked us what thoughts and feelings were evoked and memories as we looked at these coins, just some pennies and nickels, quarters. And various stories were shared. Memories of grandkids begging for a quarter to put in the gumball machine outside the store. A beloved aunt who gifted state quarters each year, which the then teenage recipient thought was dumb at that time, but now that collection of all 50 state quarters seems pretty cool and brings up fond memories of this aunt. I, as I looked at those coins, thought about my kids' tooth fairy experiences. When they were younger, the tooth fairy would place under their pillow a coin from another country, wherever that international tooth fairy happened to be last, which purely coincidentally lined up with places that I or my friends had traveled in the past. These are warm memories that evoke love and care among the generations, all from holding a couple of coins in our hands. And perhaps you who are listening today have similar kinds of memories when you look at those coins in your hand. In today's gospel, Jesus encounters a coin, but it evokes a very different feeling from those who are gathered with him in the temple. This coin is imbued with a different kind of symbolism. The coin in question is a denarius, a silver Roman coin that was worth about a day's wage. So I'm sure if instead of a couple of pennies and nickels, I'd asked you to put your paycheck in your hand this morning, you'd have a different emotional reaction to what that means for you, right? But that's it, this denarius, it was worth a fair amount of money, this one coin. It was also the currency used to pay the imperial tax, paid as tribute to Rome, to support the Roman occupation of Israel. That's right, first century Jews were required to pay their oppressors a denarius a year to support their own oppression. You can imagine that also evoked some emotion. And finally, this was a coin engraved with a picture of Tiberius Caesar and a proclamation of his divinity, both of which broke the first commandments of not having another god and of not having graven images. This coin is idolatry. And as you can imagine, there were also some strong feelings about that. So when the Pharisees and Herodians came, trying to trap Jesus, and he has them bring a denarius and take a look at it, he's not trying to evoke nostalgia among them for when grandma gave them a coin for the gumball machine. He is bringing out this highly politically, religiously, and economically charged coin. They want to know if it's lawful to pay taxes, knowing that if Jesus says yes, he will offend all the Pharisees and all those who hate the emperor's constant meddling, as well as the poor who were particularly burdened by this tax. But if he speaks out against the tax, it won't take long for those loyal to Herod to report his sedition to the powers that be. Either way, they've got him. Except they don't. In a masterful reframing of the question, Jesus takes that coin and turns the question back upon them, using that familiar phrase from the King James, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's." Now, this phrase has been interpreted in a multitude of ways over the centuries, with some people arguing that God and politics should be kept completely separate. Other people saying, we interpret this to mean that religion is a matter of the heart and God doesn't care how you spend your money. Others say that Jesus taught that it's our duty to support the government no matter what. All of these interpretations are dubious, if not flat out wrong. Jesus' ambiguous answer to the challenge set before him makes it clear that the relationship between faith and politics is too complex to reduce to platitudes or tweets, and that the Christian life is one of careful discernment of the role of political and economic engagement in the life of faith. Simplistic interpretations also miss the point. As Jesus holds this coin in his hand, Jesus is calling those who are listening, Jesus is calling us to consider our ultimate loyalties. What is the most important thing? In what do we ultimately put our trust? Jesus, in particular, draws our attention to the image on the coin. Now, the coins of Jesus' day, as we said, bore the image of the emperor. Our coins, as you see in your hand, bear the image of political leaders as well. But as human beings created by God, we bear God's image. So if we owe that coin with the emperor's face on it to the emperor, then what do we owe God if we have God's image on us? Well, nothing less than everything, our whole and entire selves. What is the most important thing? Where do our ultimate loyalties lie? I love to imagine Jesus there in the temple holding this little coin with an image of Caesar on it, this picture of divinity holding the power of the empire in the palm of his hand. God holds all of our human strength and power and life in his hands. And even when we totally screw up the way we use those things, God still remains extraordinarily loyal to us, all the way to the cross and the grave and to the empty tomb. God's loyalty is shown through love. And this extraordinary loyalty from God means that we can give extraordinary loyalty to God through our love. This week, we've seen all sorts of things in the news: fighting about politics, anxiety about economics, uncertainty about what the next few weeks and months will bring. And some of those conversations are really important to have. But in the midst of that, we must not lose sight of the questions before us. What is the most important thing? In what, in whom, do we ultimately put our trust? We, who bear God's image, are called to love as Jesus loved, to live our lives with generosity, with patience, with grace for one another. Paradoxically, these next few weeks, one way we'll show that love is by being physically apart. Turns out what the world needs now is not our presence as church, but our absence. Through our diligence in things like hand washing and social distancing, we may indeed be saving the lives of people we've never met. Today, our love really does look like an empty church. But even still, we remain the church. We remain connected. We are one body, even when we are not together in the flesh. And we can trust that God meets us wherever we are. So over these next few weeks, let's find ways to be church together apart. We will pray. We'll send notes and make phone calls to one another. We are all, for these next few weeks, homebound members, and we will care for one another that way. We'll be generous, whatever that looks like in your context. Goes beyond don't hoard the toilet paper, although that's true too. It involves being mindful of the financial needs of others through this time. Keep giving, keep sharing as you are able. There are going to be organizations that need our funds more than ever. Keep giving to the church so that our church body can continue to be church together, apart. If your situation allows it, practice Sabbath over these next few weeks. This downtime can be a gift, an imposed Sabbath to sit still and be with our family. Enjoy this rest and renewal time by way of connecting with God and with others. However you spend this coming week, throughout all the craziness, remember, what is the most important thing? In whom do we ultimately put our trust? Take a peek at those coins in your hand again. No matter the feelings that they may evoke. These little bits of copper and nickel carry with them a promise that even though their value may change, God's mercy and grace will not. Easter promises us that love gets the last word. Not the emperor, not our finances, not even our Sunday morning schedule. Love gets the last word. Amen.